Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's our family meeting on race and justice. Is this a tipping point? On the Brian Lehrer Show today, last year's elections in New York City were already a tipping point on race and justice. Mayor de Blasio was elected partly on his staunch opposition to Ray Kelly-style stop and frisk. And Ken Thompson unseated longtime Brooklyn DA Charles Hines, running on a platform partly of criminal justice reform. Once in office, he quickly announced that he would stop prosecuting most low-level marijuana cases that the police brought in. The NYPD was behind, but seems to have now come along on that policy. And now, as most progressive voices in New York are calling for a special prosecutor for police brutality cases, Thompson is saying no. He wants those cases for himself as Brooklyn DA. We'll start there. DA Thompson, thanks for crossing county lines and coming to our Lower Manhattan studio. Welcome back to WNYC.
It's my honor to be here. Thank you.
And I think it's fair to say that most people who agree with you on most things want a new special prosecutor law of some kind for alleged police abuse cases, because the DAs work so closely with the police every day, it's seen as a fundamental structural conflict of interest. You don't agree?
Well, no, I don't. I believe that, first of all, I respect New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman.
He's got one of the proposals.
Yes.
Well, he wants to take it.
Yeah, but I disagree with his proposal and similar proposals that would call for having the authority taken away from local prosecutors and given to a special prosecutor to investigate and potentially prosecute police officers who kill an unarmed civilian. You know, as the duly elected district attorney of Brooklyn, I'm more than able to thoroughly and fairly investigate any fatality of an unarmed civilian by a police officer. As a federal prosecutor, I successfully prosecuted along with the attorney general nominee Loretta Lynch, Justin Volpe, for torturing Abner Louima.
Right. You worked in that office under Loretta Lynch, the U.S. attorney's office in Brooklyn, before becoming Brooklyn DA.
Right. And the folks of Brooklyn voted for me to keep them safe from all crimes, including acts of police brutality. And so I ought to be able to, based on my experience, based on the fact that I am the chief law enforcement officer of the third largest DA's office in the country behind Los Angeles and Chicago, with very experienced prosecutors, to prosecute these cases. And I understand it. I get it that people are upset because of Ferguson and because of Gardner. I clearly get it. But that doesn't mean that I should be robbed and other local prosecutors of our right to be able to fairly and thoroughly investigate these cases. And you just look at the history of these cases. I just recently indicted two cops in Brooklyn for assaulting a 16-year-old young man named Kareem Tribble, who had his hands up in the air, who was seeking to surrender, and they hit him in the mouth with their gun. Indicted them. I work with the cops, but they crossed the line. Sean Bell, Judge Brown in Queens, indicted those officers. Rob Johnson, up in the Bronx, indicted the officers in the Amadou Diallo case. And so we have examples. And so I want people to understand that, yes, we need to look at criminal justice reforms, but I don't agree that the answer is taking these cases from the 62 district attorneys around the state and investing this powerful authority in one special prosecutor.
One problem here that the people on the other side of this question point out is that the office of district attorney is elected, so there is incentive to cater to public opinion. On Staten Island, we know who the electorate is. Maybe Dan Donovan led that grand jury to its non-indictment because he's being responsive to his core constituency, maybe. Maybe your core constituency in Brooklyn is different, and you want to make a show of the fact that you can indict police officers. Maybe that's no less compromised a position to start from, though, on hot-button police abuse cases. Why shouldn't my listeners be concerned about that?
Brian, I don't want, and I don't think any DA wants to make an example of police officers. Our duty is to do justice and to be fair to civilians and to the police. The proposals that are being floated are not really workable. For instance, the Attorney General of the State of New York is elected as well every 4 years. He just got reelected, right?
But that's only one of the – I know Eric Schneiderman is saying, give it to me.
I'm aware of –
another forum is that the governor or somebody could appoint an independent special prosecutor in these hot-button cases.
But the problem with it is this. We have 62 counties in the state. So, first of all, it will signal that you can't trust local prosecutors to handle these cases. There's something about us where you just can't trust us. So you have to take these cases and put it in the hands of someone else. I disagree with that.
But it's not you. It's the structure. And it's the perception of conflict of interest because prosecutors and district attorneys work with the police so closely every single day to get the jobs done.
Well, let me just say this. Let me go back to the point you made in terms of if it's just put in the hands of a special prosecutor who's appointed by the governor. How is that going to work, Brian? If there's a shooting up in Buffalo, New York, a young unarmed guy is killed by the police up there. Special prosecutor is supposed to swoop down and deal with it. But what happens if something breaks out in Brooklyn a week later and then breaks out in Syracuse? How is this person supposed to tell the folks up in Buffalo, hold on, I'll be back. I've got to go to I got to go to Brooklyn. It's not.
Maybe it would be a different special prosecutor.
So, okay, let me ask you this. The argument that they're making is the reason whether it's going to be put in the hands of the duly elected New York State Attorney General or someone who the governor appoints is because the rationale is because you can't really trust us. We work too closely with these police officers. Then why is it that the proposal is really just to take a small subset of cases? Use of deadly force on someone who was unarmed. Why not? If you can't trust me and my 61 other colleagues in the state to handle police brutality cases, then take them all from us. Why should I be able to go into the grand jury like I did and indict those two police officers for assaulting that young 16-year-old boy in Brooklyn? If you can't trust me, then take them all from me and take them all from every DA.
Them all meaning all police-oriented?
Every act of police brutality in the state. It is unworkable, Brian. Let me also ask you this. Who decides if somebody was unarmed? Who makes that threshold determination? Because there's often instances when there's a factual dispute. People in the community say that person did not have a gun. And the officers say they did. And there's a gun on the scene. Who makes the determination if the person was armed or unarmed? Is it the DA or is it the special prosecutor?
All right. Listeners, is Brooklyn DA Ken Thompson convincing you that a special prosecutor law is not needed in the case of, as Governor Cuomo's framing is, killings of unarmed people by the police as a matter of structural reform? This is becoming one of the things that advocates for police reform are putting at the tops of their list. Here is an advocate of police reform who was elected last year to be Brooklyn DA, Ken Thompson. He's saying, no, this is part of my job. I want to keep this job. Is he convincing you? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we'll take a few phone calls on this. We're not going to make our whole interview about this. And so as people are calling in, DA Thompson, in general terms, as the old saying goes, do you think a DA can indict a ham sandwich?
I think a DA, an experienced DA, should be able to present evidence to a grand jury in a fair way and seek an indictment. I mean, if someone committed a crime, there should be ample evidence that you bring into the grand jury. The grand jury is made up of people from the community. They may disagree.
That's ideally. In reality, are they putty in your hands?
I wouldn't say that they're putty in our hands because grand jurors ask questions. They just don't sit there as some folks think. Obviously, there is concern because of what has happened over the last couple of weeks with respect to high-profile grand juries. But I think we do a disservice to the folks who serve on grand juries to think that they are sort of like at the beck and call and have no say. I think that's unfair, and I don't think that's accurate.
The saying implies, obviously, that DAs can also non-indict a ham sandwich. Do you think that's what happened in the death of Eric Garner?
You know, Brian, I can't comment on what happened in that grand jury because I wasn't in it, and I have the utmost respect for all my colleagues in the state. I don't know what happened, and I think that People are upset, and I get it, I understand it, but I can't comment on what happened. I can only control what happens in Brooklyn.
Having seen the videotape, do you think personally that justice was done in that case?
I'm not sure. I have to say that looking at the video gives me concern. I mean, as a person, gives me concern.
Do you think that grand jury might have come to a different conclusion under a different DA?
Brian, I can't say that because I don't know all the evidence that was presented to the grand jury. I mean, apparently there were many witnesses who went in, and there were many pieces of exhibits introduced to that grand jury. So I can't say if you take that grand jury and you transfer them to Brooklyn or the Bronx or Queens, it would have been a different result.
What'd you think of the Ferguson prosecutor's news conference? A lot of people thought he sounded more like a defense attorney than a prosecutor. That's part of what raised this new outcry for an independent prosecutor in such cases.
I didn't agree with the way he went about it, per se, because I think that there were deep-rooted pockets of resentment in that community. And I think that that particular case just brought all of that to the forefront. And I think that prosecutor there were a lot of accusations made against that prosecutor in terms of whether that prosecutor could be fair based on his personal history of his father being killed by a father who was a police officer being killed in the line of duty. And so I can't really criticize totally because I didn't walk in his shoes. All I'm saying is that clearly there is something wrong in Ferguson. Clearly there's something wrong in this country, and we need to do things better. We need to understand that there is a history of cases in which people have been killed or died, and the community feels that there was no justice. Just in New York, there's a litany of cases from Eleanor Bumpers to Anthony Byers, to Patrick Dorisman, to Sean Bell, to Amadou Diallo, going back to 1973 with Clifford Glover, a 10-year-old boy shot in his back by police officer Thomas Shea. You got Randy Evans, and now you have Eric Gardner.
Hardly any indictments or convictions in any of those cases that you just listed from New York history. Is something structurally wrong?
Well, I have to say this. I think that the governor is right when he says that he is going to convene a comprehensive review of our criminal practice here in the state.
Don't we already know after 40 years of those cases you just listed?
I think that we can do better. I think that people misunderstand the grand secrecy, the purpose of the grand secrecy with the grand jury. I was at a community event and there was an elected official, you know, before I got there, describing the grand jury, and the way they described it, it was so sinister. You know, I thought they were going to say the DA is the boogeyman. I mean, it was just so I had to explain to this group that the purpose of the grand jury secrecy is to protect people, because if Miss Jones sees somebody selling drugs on the corner and they call the police and the police make that arrest, Miss Jones should be able to go into the grand jury and testify about that without doing it publicly and then going home and trying to have a nice night's sleep.
But in the Ferguson case, the prosecutor held a big news conference afterwards and he released so much transcript material of testimony to the grand jury. Here, I know the law is different in New York State, but DA Dan Donovan didn't even ask the court to release a lot of transcript of testimony, even by the police officer. Should he have asked for more? Would you have asked for more?
Brian, you have to ask Dan Donovan that. What I would say is, in order to restore public confidence in our criminal justice system, I support releasing the transcript of grand jury proceedings involving police fatalities. Once the grand jury has completed its work, so long as the court oversees the process to ensure that witnesses are protected, because a delicate balance must be maintained between the importance of protecting grand jury secrecy and the trust that people must have in the fairness of our criminal justice system. I'm saying that for me, Ken Thompson, Brooklyn DA.
Let's take a few phone calls for Ken Thompson, Brooklyn DA. Laurie in Bed-Stuy, you're on WNYC. Hello, Laurie.
Hi, good morning, Ryan. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
I first want to say I'm a supporter of DA Thompson, and I've supported his campaign, but I feel like you are very wrong on this particular point. And I think your inability, one, as a DA, but two, as a DA of African descent, your inability to clearly say that what we saw happen in Ferguson, what we all saw happen on that videotape to Eric Gardner, it was a crime that should have been prosecuted and should have led to an indictment. Your inability to say that without the equivocation now, even after what we've seen, is part of the reason there is a distrust from the community and its ability to trust local offices to prosecute these cases. And if we don't recognize that history and the fact that the history of the laws that protect police officers have their roots in laws that protected white slave owners who happened to kill their slaves while meeting out punishment,
The president of the United States also said, you have to respect the individual grand jury and the individual process because you weren't in the room. You haven't seen all the evidence. You're ready to go way beyond that, and you want all our elected officials to say, no, they got it wrong?
I want our elected officials, especially those who are of African descent and who know better. And quite frankly, President Obama knows better, and he knows what's really going on. I expect our elected officials, those who come from the black community, who are elected to represent the interests of the black community, to speak up and speak truth to power when racism and institutionalized racism is marginalizing us in the process, and they are more concerned about protecting their jobs and future advancements than they are speaking and giving voice to the people who do not have access to that microphone on their own.
Laurie, thank you. D.A. Thompson.
Laurie, let me just say this. I understand your concern. When I looked at the video, like everybody else did, I was concerned. Eric Gardner repeatedly said that he could not breathe. And so it is difficult for me to then jump to the conclusion that the grand jury was completely, you know, wrong or you know, they didn't want... I wasn't in the grand jury. If I was over the grand jury, I would be able to speak more knowledgeably. I think that I said I completely get it why people are upset. It's difficult for me to sit here as the Brooklyn DA and throw rocks at another DA who had that case, who had all the evidence. I had none of it. I watched the video. I was concerned. I have a young child. A young son who's 8 years old. And so I am clear as the Brooklyn DA that we need to change things. And again, I am the DA who indicted the cops who beat that boy in Crown Heights who had his hands up. And so you have to give me a chance to handle the cases that are before me. I'm here and I'm speaking honestly. We need to change things, and I definitely think that we need to make our grand jury system maybe somewhat more transparent. I'll give you an example. We have to protect witnesses, undercover agents who go on the grand jury, people who see crimes in their neighborhoods. We have to protect them. So we can't have these public sort of inquisitions where anyone can walk in a courtroom and hear people testify. We also have to protect innocent people who may be under investigation who had done absolutely nothing wrong. Why should they be disparaged to the community? They can never get their good name back. But at the same time, we have to be able to explain to the community why a decision like in Gardner occurred, because the community needs answers. And so I support amending the law so we can give answers.
You announced formation of a grand jury in the stairwell shooting of a Kai Gurley in a NYCHA building in East New York. Why in that case, which police say appeared to be an accidental discharge, he wasn't even meaning to fire his weapon, we're told he just pulled it out, which I guess they're allowed to do on routine patrol going into a stairwell in a NYCHA building, and they say it accidentally went off. Why is that rising to the level of appointing a grand jury?
An innocent man was killed. An innocent man who had done nothing wrong lost his life. All he was doing was walking down the staircase, which is not a crime. An innocent man whose 2-year-old daughter will grow up without her father lost his life. when the statements were made that it was an accident. It was right after it occurred, and I get that. But we have to do an investigation, and I believe I have an obligation to the people of Brooklyn to do a thorough and fair investigation. And the best way to do it is by way of a grand jury. And so I have no hesitation. I'm going into the grand jury, and I'm going to present the evidence. It's going to be a fair investigation, fair to the police officers involved, but fair also to Akai Gurley and his family.
Could there be something wrong with the policy? Should police not be allowed to patrol with weapons drawn without even a threat that they think they're encountering at a particular moment?
You know, Brian, that's a good question, because you're talking to someone who was raised in public housing, part of my life. I was raised by a single mother in what we used to call the projects. And because my mother sacrificed her life for me and my brother and sister, became a New York City police officer in the early 70s when there were no women on the street. She changed my life.
And it was a much more dangerous time.
Yes, and she gave me a chance. And the reason why I raise that is because the vast majority of people who live in public housing are hardworking, law-abiding folks. And so I look at people who live there like when I lived there with my family. And I understand the concerns about danger and crime, but there's some hardworking folks in there, and there's children running around as well.
So you want them to look at that policy. You're not calling for a change, per se.
I'm not calling for a change. It's just, as the Brooklyn DA, someone who was raised in public housing, I think I have a different take.
In general, D.A. Thompson, is this a tipping point? That's the title of our special show today.
Yes.
Or could this be a tipping point for race and justice in New York or the United States, because there is so much focus now on these issues?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, look, when I did the Abner Louima trial with Loretta Lynch, that was many years ago, you had a New York City police officer, Brian, who dragged a helpless, badly beaten man who was handcuffed behind his back into the bathroom of the 70th Precinct and sodomized that man with a broken broomstick, literally ripped up his intestines, almost killed him. And we held him accountable under great pressure. I don't think that going from episode to episode and people get upset and people protest is necessarily the way to do it. There's got to be systemic change in how we handle these cases. There's got to be systemic change in terms of we've got to protect the grand jury secrecy, but we have to acknowledge that people have a right to understand when these fatalities happen, what occurred in the grand jury. Because if not, then people is going to erode the trust, and we need the public's trust in law enforcement, because if we don't have it, it is not going to work. And so for me, I'm fair, and I'm going to take this Akai Gurley matter into the grand jury because it's going to be a fair presentation, and the people of Brooklyn have to decide.
Maybe you heard the reporting from our last segment on how often the police bring resisting arrest charges against blacks in the city compared to whites stopped for the same original violation, usually low-level violations. And we played the tape of an example of a couple in Queens, both arrested for resisting arrest over the underlying violation of his riding a bicycle on the sidewalk in front of his own house. The charges were later dropped, and one of the officers was found to have acted improperly by the department. Have you been aware of this pattern of different rates of resisting arrest for the same underlying charges when there's contact with blacks as opposed to others? And is it something that you can look at as the Brooklyn DA when deciding whether to prosecute resisting arrest charges when police bring in cases like this?
There's something that we certainly can look at. There's something that we may look at.
And in your opinion, is there just too much contact between the police and low-income black and Latino New Yorkers over too many small things? Is that an underlying cause of all of this? You came in and you changed the policy on when you would prosecute low-level marijuana crimes. That was historic, and that seemed to bring the NYPD along a few months later. Is it even bigger than that?
I think that there is a gulf of distrust between many communities and the police who patrol them. And I think if the community, if we do not have the respect of the community as law enforcement, we're going to have these situations that are going to explode, and we're going to be dealing, going from crisis to crisis. And so I am determined to not only keep the people of Brooklyn safe, but also to make sure that there's equal justice for all, make sure that there's fundamental fairness in the criminal justice system. And I am just getting started.
He is just getting started, nearing the end of his first year in office as Brooklyn District Attorney. Ken Thompson, thank you very much for giving us so much time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank
and
you
your openness
me.
To all these questions from me and our listeners. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Brian.
And we'll talk again.
Yes.